President Donald Trump's EPA chief unveiled a new carbon emissions rule for power plants, saying the U.S. can still cut pollution without further damaging a coal industry already in decline. The Affordable Clean Energy Rule, or ACE, replaces former President Barack Obama's much tougher Clean Power Plan, which was never enacted because of lawsuits by Republican states.
The world's big plane makers gather at the Paris Air Show. Airbus and Boeing may hope it will focus on the future and not dwell too much on the present. Airbus is still smarting from the decision to end output of its flagship A380 Super Jumbo. And both firms are grappling with a slowdown in orders. They may prefer talking about a brewing contest over new medium-sized jets capable of flying long distances.
North Korean leader Kim Jong-un kicked off another major summit on Thursday, but this time it's not with Donald Trump. Instead, Kim's rolled out the red carpet for President Xi Jinping, marking the first trip by a Chinese leader to Pyongyang in more than a decade. China's the only major ally of North Korea. And Xi's arrival comes as tensions flare once again between the U.S. and North Korea over Trump's efforts to get Pyongyang to ditch its nuclear weapons. China and North Korea have a long-standing relationship. They fought together against the U.S. during the Korean War of the 1950s and have traditionally called each other as close as, quote, lips and teeth.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Monday. It's January. It's June the 24th, not January. And it's starting to feel like June, too, doesn't it, with the heat and humidity on the rise this morning in the Chicago area. The forecast is calling for a little bit drier and warmer weather, which will be good news for the farmers moving forward. Overdue warmth in the Midwest. We will, of course, keep you posted on the weather throughout the hour this morning. On the program today, Adam Robinson is in our CEO spotlight this morning. He's the CEO of Hireology, a media platform that is sort of changing the rules, changing the landscape with hiring and human resources. Adam will be in our CEO spotlight again. It's coming up momentarily, we'll welcome Adam onto the show. A little bit later this morning, you've probably seen that show Shark Tank. Walmart is going to be doing something like that with local businesses. And Anne Hatfield will be here. She's the Director of State and Local Communications at Walmart. And we'll be talking a little bit about the companies that will be pitching to Walmart, items that you could see on store shelves soon. That'll be at about 5:38 this morning. But first, let's begin on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. The opening bell rings this morning after another big week of gains, despite a slight fade just before Friday's close. Optimism over prospects of a future interest rate cut and positive signs with China have moved stocks as the trading week came to a close. Last Friday at the closing bell, the Dow lost about 34 points. The Nasdaq was down about 20. And the S&P was off just about 4 points. This morning, we see a little bit of strength in the markets heading to the opening bell. Dow futures are up 61 points, nearly a quarter of a percent. S&P and Nasdaq futures are up about a quarter of a percent to a third. In Europe this morning, markets are generally in the red in London, Germany, and France, off by nearly a half a percent in Germany, nearly a quarter percent in France, and just fractionally in London. In Asia, markets are in the green generally, with China markets up nearly a quarter of a percent. That's the Shanghai in Hong Kong up nearly a quarter of a percent. And the Nikkei is ending the day up almost a tenth of a percent at 27.35, up 27.35. And oil in the United States is at 30, make that 57.88 a barrel, which is up about 45 cents. A couple of stories as we begin this morning. Toys R Us may be making a comeback after it went bankrupt and shuttered its stores in the U.S. last year. Two new locations are set to open this year. Former company executive Richard Berry is now the CEO of True Kids Brands and plans to resurrect the beloved Toys R Us brand. While the company isn't disclosing its strategy, more stores are planned for 2020. Resistance against the T-Mobile-Sprint merger is growing. Four more states have joined a lawsuit by state attorneys general to stop the deal. Hawaii, Massachusetts, Minnesota, and Nevada are the other four states which are included in the complaint filed last week. Four states joined New York, California, and the District of Columbia in their effort to stop T-Mobile from acquiring Sprint. The lawsuit says the merger could cost subscribers more than $4.5 billion annually. And Ford says its new Mustang, it will be its most powerful car ever. The automaker released a statement about the Mustang Shelby GT500, says the 2020 model will go on sale this fall. Ford says the new Mustang will have 760 horsepower V8 engine, making it the most powerful street-legal Ford ever. It claims the engine will allow the GT500 to go from 0 to 60 in about 3.5 seconds. Ford has not yet given a price for the new Mustang. Let's begin this morning with the CEO Spotlight. Tight jobs market out there. We've been reporting a lot about jobs. Many employers having a hard time finding people to fill those spots. This is a great time to be a top hiring and human resources software maker. And Hireology, based here in Chicago, is just that. We welcome onto the program this morning Adam Robinson, the CEO of Hireology. Adam, good morning. Welcome to the opening bell.
Thanks for having me here.
We want to begin first by having you tell us a little bit about Hireology. Give us a sense of what it is, how it works.
Yeah, Hireology is a talent technology platform, recruitment, CRM, and digital retailing solution that helps employers with everything they need to be good at the people side of their business. So from software that hosts their career site and employment brand through to applicant tracking and recruitment CRM that helps them run a great hiring process, and then integration into systems they rely on after they hire someone, time and attendance, payroll, benefits administration. Mm-hmm. We give them everything they need to be competitive and effective.
That's not really been done well in the past, has it? So this is sort of an improvement on old systems, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, most companies are terrible at hiring. I mean, you know, it's post to a job board, pray for applicants, manage it with email, forget the interview was scheduled in 10 minutes, scramble to find some questions, walk in unprepared, hire the person you like, hope they work out. I mean, it's just, it's been inefficient and challenging, particularly in this economy. You just can't work that way anymore. You know, you'll end up understaffed or wrongly staffed if you do that.
You mentioned the economy, and that's a pretty good jumping off point for our conversation. What has it been like since we've been in this tight labor market with too few people to go around for the jobs that are open?
Yeah, we're in this crazy spot where earlier this year, the number of jobs available in the United States that were unfilled exceeded the number of people looking for work. So literally, if every human being in the United States who wanted a job took one of the open jobs, we would still have open jobs to fill. It is absolutely bananas out there. It means a great time to be a skilled, competent, available member of the workforce. The jobs are there right now.
And lots of trends show that people are now feeling comfortable, not just necessarily finding a job, but leaving a job they're in to find a better job. Are those the kinds of folks that you see coming to the site? Those are the kinds of attractive people that companies are looking for these days?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's so Hireology sells software that's a tool that helps a company do this better themselves. So we're not a job board. We don't recruit on behalf of our customers. We give them infrastructure that help them stand out and be attractive in large part. And so what today's worker is looking for are really three things. They want to know, number one, what's in it for me that's beyond the job? What's the career path? If I come to work for you, what will I learn? What can I do? Where will I go? That's the number one thing that employers need to advertise today. Second is pay stability. So in this era where increasingly it's gig economy, it's Uber and Lyft and Instacart, and you know we're going to be paying people to charge Lyft scooters on the West Side and all sorts of things now. If I come to work for you, can I count on stable pay, right? Is this a full commission job or is this a base pay job? Highly variable, really important. And then third is work-life balance, which, you know, as I like to say, doesn't really exist anymore. I mean, it's just life now. I mean, you know, we carry our lives around with us in our pocket, on a mobile device. You know, we're talking to people all day long at work. It's work, it's life, it's personal. It doesn't matter. It's all blended together. And so if you can provide me career path, stable pay, and allow me the flexibility to do what I want to do, that's a recipe for recruiting success. You know, the flip side is murky career path that's not explained, highly variable pay, and really terrible hours or inflexibility in terms of workplace policy. Those are the employers that are really struggling right now.
Without giving away Hireology's secrets, what is it about the systems that you have put in place for these companies when they're searching that not only helps them screen out the candidates they don't want, but to find the perfect ones? What is the either entering of information or the algorithms that are at play that help the companies find the perfect people?
Yeah, the technology required to be successful at this has really changed. So 20 years ago, when I came out of the University of Illinois and I went to look for a job, I went to Monster.com. I went to Monster.com or Career Builder. All the jobs were there. I threw my resume all over the internet and hoped some people called me. And that's the way it's been for 20 years. A couple years ago, this company you may have heard of called Google decided that they were going to own the search results for jobs. So today, 80% of all job search starts on Google, 80%. So Google gets to decide what job listings show up. So it's not about going to a job board. The job board's just going to show up their result in Google, and that person is going to stay in Google. And so Google's decided that the actual employer's job is going to be the most relevant result. So if you as an employer have technology in place that allows your jobs to be indexed by Google, it'll show up first, you know, first page above the fold search result. And you have a huge advantage if you do this right. And so that's what's changed. 75% of job search starts on a phone. 80% of all job search starts with Google. And that is what's different. And so the technology required to be successful in winning applicants are all the same concepts that businesses have had to master in terms of online e-commerce marketing. It's all the same stuff.
It sounds complicated, but I guess it really isn't if you kind of know what you're talking about here in terms of the technology. I guess the magical part I'm getting at is what in there helps the company, for instance, match people, potential applicants, to the company culture, for example?
We have a variety of tools in our platform that helps employers assess job fit. We have what we call a SmartRank pre-screen survey. So when you apply to a job with a company running Hireology, you're going to get an immediate email. It's going to say, hey, thanks for applying for this job at ABC Incorporated. As the next step in our process, we'd like for you to answer a few questions about your background and what you want to do. They're routed to a survey. That survey is scored and allows them, the employer, to look at a ranking, an initial ranking of those results. We have a variety of customized job fit assessments. So if you're hiring a service manager at an automotive dealership, we have an assessment for that. If you're hiring a sales manager, we have an assessment for that. We also automate the background check process. We automate the reference checking process. We automate a number of skills tests, right? So better to find out your new bookkeeper has never used QuickBooks before, before they're on your payroll, not right after you're on, you know, their payroll. So, you know, those kind of things help employers reduce the risk of hiring somebody that ultimately was not going to be a fit.
It also sounds, too, like they're reducing costs in a great way, because before you would have to have hiring managers that did all of the work that you're talking about. Talk to us a little bit about the cost of this to the companies that put Hireology into play and what kinds of savings they're getting out of it.
Yeah, there's a few costs in play here. Number one is the cost of a bad hire, which, you know, most estimates put it somewhere around 10 times one full year of compensation in terms of the hard costs. I wasted some payroll taxes, state unemployment insurance, those kinds of things. But then there's the soft costs of, well, I put this person in front of my customers and now that didn't work out. And so I lose sales. The revenue slips, customer retention and satisfaction can go down, those kinds of things. The other is that every day I have an unfilled job, there's opportunity cost. So if I have a sales job that's open, that's every day that job is open is a day that salesperson's not in the market selling for me. And that costs me lost opportunity, you know, on average about $1,000 a day of gross profit lost by having an unfilled job. So if I can take the amount of time it takes to fill a job from, say, 30 days on average to 20 days on average, I get 10 more selling days from that person and multiply that by the number of people I hire every year, and you get a really big bottom line impact.
Yeah. Talk to us a little bit about the growth of Hirology. You've not only had some wonderful funding rounds, but you're spiraling up, aren't you? You're adding not only staff in your front office and your offices, but the number of customers you've accrued to is growing.
Yeah, and we're celebrating 10 years here, and you know, from some fairly humble beginnings in the back of a residential real estate office at the corner of Clark and Diversey, now to here, you know, sharing some space with you guys in this building. You know, we're 215 people now. We serve over 6,500 customers in the U.S. and Canada. We work with one in six new car franchise dealers in the U.S. We work with over 1,000 home healthcare customers. We work with over 3,000 consumer and professional service brands in franchising and other networks. It's been pretty exciting. And so, you know, the kind of customers we serve make up about a third of U.S. employment. So we're pretty excited about the future.
When we see headlines of 27 million in funding, 12 million in funding, what is that money? What do you use that for? I know you've moved into a couple of different areas, like, for instance, healthcare. Mm-hmm. That's a new area for you, isn't it?
It is, yeah. So home health care, senior care, growing 10% a year. The population's aging. As the population ages, they need more care. There's a shortage of caregivers to the tune of about 65,000 right now over the next 5 years. It's a huge growth area. If we were going to only operate as fast as we could organically, we'd be going much slower. But we, you know, we made a decision, our partners in the board, to go faster, which means that we need to use other people's money to do that because it costs money to get customers. And so we think being first in these markets matters. We think it's a big opportunity, and being there first is worth a lot. And so it makes sense in that context to raise money and go faster. And really, two things. Number one, customer acquisition, faster. And then number two, product development to keep our competitive moat wide and stay ahead of our competitors in the market. That's where we're deploying that money.
You mentioned the healthcare sector, and the long-term healthcare sector too is probably the big one. Talk to us a little bit about where growth goes from here, especially in those areas.
Yeah, if you can think of all the kinds of businesses that have multiple sites in industries where people are the product and where turnover and the skills gap is a real challenge, that's where we play. So certainly healthcare, long-term care. You can think about the hotel and hospitality industry. You can think about any dealer network from boats to bikes to heavy equipment or your Caterpillar or John Deere dealer that's trying to hire diesel technicians. The financial services industry, real estate, property management. These are all companies that have to operate, you know, tens, hundreds, or even thousands of locations. They're managed locally but united by a common brand. That's our customer base. And you know, there's a long runway there for us.
Not only regionally, but nationally, right?
Nationally, you know, we've had success in Canada. And I would imagine at some point in the future, we'll be taking a look at international expansion.
Let's talk a little bit about you as a CEO. First of all, have you dealt with the challenges of growing this fast? Have there been any special challenges that were not necessarily touching on here today? And what kind of manager, what kind of CEO are you?
Yeah, the our challenges are no different than anyone else. We have to work very hard to hire the number of people we need to hit our plan. I mean, we this year have hired, you know, as a 200-person company, 33 new entry-level business development reps or sales reps. We're competing with every other technology company in Chicago. So it's Hirology versus Salesforce, LinkedIn, Glassdoor, Indeed, everybody else, all hiring the same people. And so that, you know, frankly, is a challenge, one that we're meeting. We use our own software, of course, to do that, but that's challenge number one. You know, number two, when you grow that quickly, you know, I'm a believer that culture first is the right business strategy, that culture, as they say, trumps business strategy. The, you know, great people and an okay product will beat mediocre people and a great product. I think we have great people and a great product. So, you know, keeping that culture consistent and intact as we scale has been a challenge. But, you know, to your final question, it speaks to my style. I like to hire great people, set a vision for what we want to do, resource them with what they need to be successful, and then get out of their way, right? Let's set targets and let's trust people to do their work. And when we do that, I don't have to be involved in everything, and it creates opportunity for other people to grow and succeed.
Hierology, you get all kinds of lists and honors here, but culture is one of them. A top 50 best workplace, you were listed in there as having a top company culture. What else makes a good company culture, would you say, not only at Hierology, but for other companies as well?
In my opinion, culture done right starts with understanding your values as a business. All right, so core values is a buzzword, but what it means is it doesn't matter what business we're in. If we decided to operate car washes tomorrow, our five core values would be the same. It's how we choose to treat ourselves, others, how we choose to approach the market, you know, with pathological optimism. We're eager to improve. We care about incremental effort and creating wow moments. You know, we've got a core value that I can't say on the air that, you know, talks about the kind of people that we want to work with. Everybody can go to our website and check out what that is. I mean, all of those things are important to us, and we hire, promote. We've fired customers who have treated our people poorly because, you know, if you're not willing to make those kind of decisions, the values aren't real. They're just marketing statements. And I think what's helped us be successful is we've made hard choices when the decision that we could have made, the easy choice, would have violated a core value. And that's how you keep that stuff real.
Starting out with the culture, building the culture from the foundation, having it in place as you're growing, those are exceptional qualities. What about a company that doesn't have that? Can a company who doesn't have a good culture develop one and change?
Absolutely. I've seen it happen thousands of times. I mean, you can have culture by design or you can have culture by default. And if you have culture by default, meaning it's just kind of created itself and you're the leader of that business or a manager in that business, you want to change it, start by identifying the things that you stand for. A good exercise I like to suggest is, you know, think about who's the best person you have working for you, right? This is the person that when the chips are down, it's all on the line. This is the person you send in, right? Now, make a list of all the things that would describe that person, just adjectives. In that list are your core values. They're the things you value, right? They're the things that you care about. Socialize that with your organization. Get their input. Hone that down to somewhere between 3 and 7 things. That's the start you want. And then you just have to start operating based on those values.
What is it about Chicago that helps you be successful at Hierology?
I believe Chicago is absolutely the best place to start and build a business. It is a diversified economy. You've got all kinds of opportunity to be in all kinds of different businesses. The talent pool here is exceptional. The university systems here, you know, we've been stealing Michigan and Ohio's best and brightest for years at Hierology. You know, come on over. It's great here. You know, you've got a growing venture capital ecosystem. And the tech community here is bigger in a way that just didn't exist 10 years ago. All of those things. And the cost is less here, right? It costs less to rent space. It costs less to live here than if you're in New York or San Francisco. All of those things accrue great benefit to this city. And I think is why you see so many companies growing and successful here in the startup scene.
There's a great entrepreneurial spirit here. It's very strong. And I know that you're sort of living and breathing the success of that and giving back a little too. I was reading in your bio that you donate your time to helping other entrepreneurs sort of come up. Talk to us a little bit about that and why that's important to you.
Well, so at my core, what I care most about is helping other people achieve success. I mean, that's what drives me. I enjoy that. And so I think at Hierology, it's about creating a system where people can be successful. But I remember starting out, this isn't my first business. My last one could be described as a dumpster fire, right? I learned a lot. It was really expensive. We had some success until we hit a brick wall. I remember what that felt like to go through that. And the people that helped me through that were seasoned entrepreneurs who said, well, this is just kind of how it happens. This is what I did in that situation. And I learned from that. And, you know, giving back to someone who was in that similar situation to me, it's important because no one is successful on their own. It requires people that are going to step up and help to give advice. to share their experience or to pitch in and lift the heavy lifting with you. And all of those things, I just feel like if you add value back to the community and to your peers in that way, you're going to get it back tenfold. And so I try to live that every day.
Well, Adam, it's wonderful meeting you. All the best to everybody at Hireology, and come back and see us sometime.
Yeah, thanks, Steve.
Adam Robinson is the CEO of Hireology in Chicago. We're going to continue our conversation with Adam after the bell this morning and post our full conversation in the podcast of the opening bell a little bit later this morning at WGNradio.com. And to learn more about Hireology, head over to Hireology.com.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is the opening bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Monday edition of the opening bell. More than 500 companies from across the country, including 26 from Illinois, have been competing in Bentonville to participate in Walmart's Open Call event. It started on June 19th, was June 19th. This is an idea that sort of resembles Shark Tank on television, if you've ever seen that program. These companies get to showcase their products in front of Walmart. Joining us this morning is Ann Hatfield, Director of State and Local Communications at Walmart. Ann, good morning. Welcome to WGN.
Well, good morning, Steve. Thanks for having me.
You know, we say that this is sort of like Shark Tank, but something tells me it's a little bit more high stakes, isn't it?
Yeah, it's Open Call. This is really an exciting event. This is the sixth year we've done it, and we just had it this past week. It was Tuesday and Wednesday, June 18th and June 19th. And really what happens is this is an opportunity for local businesses from around the country to come to Walmart, meet with a buyer, pitch their product, and potentially land a deal right there in the spot. And get their hands or get their product on Walmart store shelves and possibly in the hands of millions of customers around the country.
Give us a sense of what goes on at one of these open calls and a little bit about the competition that is held.
You know, it's really an exciting day. The energy is so exciting. There's just this great energy in the building. I've attended this event for a couple of years now, and you have small business owners from around the country, and they're there. They've got their product. They're so excited to meet with the buyers, and you've just got this great energy going on in the building all day long. And so what happens is the entrepreneurs will apply for the ability to attend. And so there's an initial screening process that happens to make sure that their product meets some of our needs. Then if they pass that screening, then we give them an invitation to attend, and then they are set up with the buyer that is in their category. So this meeting is very important for them. And then the meeting itself is about 30 minutes, and we have, just like you mentioned, more than 500 companies attended this year's event, and that's from 48 states, D.C., Puerto Rico, Canada, Mexico, Australia, all attended this year's event. And so these companies are manufacturing their products in 44 states across the country. And so it is so exciting to meet these innovative entrepreneurs, learn about their U.S.-made products. And for some, they could walk away with a deal that accelerates the growth of their business.
Let's talk a little bit about that part of it. First of all, what kinds of things does Walmart look for? And does that change every year? I'm guessing it probably does. And how do you find, what is it that sets one of these companies apart from, let's say, another one of them?
Well, we're looking for all types of products. We have a lot of food vendors that come and present their products. And, you know, food trends are always changing. So we're always looking for new products. And we know that our customers are interested in U.S.-made products and products that we can source locally. That's important to our customers. So we're always looking for new things. But it will be in food, it'll be in home decor, apparel, hardware, toys, health and beauty aids, sporting goods, you name it. We're looking for things across the board because, as you know, in a Walmart Supercenter and on Walmart.com, we offer so many different products. So we're always looking for new, unique products that we think our customers are going to want.
This year, I understand there were 26 companies, 26 or 27 companies from Illinois. Can you tell us what some of those companies, maybe give us an example of what they were, and did any of them make it into the final round here?
Yeah, Illinois had a great showing this year. We had more than 26 companies from Illinois participating in Open Call. Of those, four companies received an immediate yes, and those are some really cool companies. We've got Divanco Foods, who presented the Billy Goat Burger, and they got a deal right on the spot. Those are frozen patties. We have another company, Collector Mount. This is, it's like a plastic mount where you can mount your comic books or collectibles or CDs, and it looks like it's floating on the wall because the mount itself almost disappears. You don't really see it, and it's adjustable. And so we thought that was a pretty cool product. Another product was the Smart Cart. They're headquartered in Libertyville. And so this is kind of a new take on a wheelbarrow. And just the way it sits, there's places where you can, you know, hold your tools. And the cart itself is, you know, just unique and a new take on the wheelbarrow. And then we have another company, Aya Foods, that makes a spicy fried rice seasoning pack. And that is, they're manufactured in North Aurora. And this is just something that we don't have right now, and it's a unique blend of spices for rice or quinoa or, you know, whatever you want to put it in. So these products, as you know, you just heard, really range the gamut, and really a great representation from Illinois this year. It's really cool.
And for these four companies, well, for all of the companies, their lives are about to change, I'm guessing. What's the next mm-hmm. step for some of these companies? Not only is this a boost for those local communities, but I'm guessing they have to scale up in some sort of way, don't they?
Yeah, exactly. So really, this begins the conversation between this company and their buyer. And so at this point, it's not like the products go on the shelves right away. That conversation now begins to make sure that the company is structured and has the infrastructure and the systems and are ready to be able to supply Walmart and make sure that they can, you know, fulfill an order. So what we do right now and over the next few months is we want to make sure these companies succeed. So we're going to help them and, you know, give them advice and work with them on, you know, it could be anything from their packaging, making sure they have the correct systems in place, whatever it is that they need. So we know they're ready and they are confident that they're ready also. And then normally what we do is we start any new product with a test in a certain number of stores. So it's not like they go nationwide right away. We want to make sure that everything is working. We may start them in a couple dozen or 50 stores or 100 stores to start, and our buyers will know which stores across the country makes the most sense for what our customers like. And then from there, we'll determine what is the best rate of growth and grow from there, be it another 100 stores or whatever that growth rate will be. And as the sales are coming in and everything is working, then we will grow at a smart rate, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. You know, I guess we could have a bigger conversation too about the job creation and commitment to U.S. Mm-hmm. manufacturing that is going on here. But it seems like this is really sort of a grassroots way of doing both of those things for Walmart.
Yeah, it really is. You know, at Walmart, we believe in supporting American products and American jobs. It just makes sense for our customers, our community, our company. And we're really leading the way. We've committed $250 billion in products that are made, sourced, or grown in the United States by 2023. We made this commitment back in 2013, and we said over the course of 10 years, we will purchase an additional $250 billion of products that are made, sourced, or grown in the U.S. And so this open call event is one piece of that commitment, and it really underscores this commitment and helps us make a difference on an issue that our customers care about.
Well, Ann, we appreciate you coming on this morning and sharing this with us, and congratulations to all these companies that we'll hopefully soon be seeing in Walmart.
Thank you. Thank you. We're really excited to support Illinois businesses.
Ann Hatfield, the Director of State and Local Communications at Walmart.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are pointing toward opening gains on Wall Street a little bit later on. Dow futures are up 61 points, nearly a quarter of a percent. S&P futures up nearly a quarter of a percent. And NASDAQ futures are up nearly a third, nearly 27 points. Let's get the latest on agriculture and commodities now. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. We ended the trade on Friday in grain and livestock with all red screens on my Reuters screen. Hogs, particularly the August-October lean hog contract, down the $3 daily limit. Cattle down $1.10 a hundredweight. Feeder cattle down 82 cents a hundredweight. Grain market wasn't much better, although wheat showed only a slight drop, but corn down 6.5 cents, and soybeans taking the big hit on Friday, down 12 cents a bushel. The Great Iowa Tractor Ride gets underway today. It's an annual event in the state of Iowa, and they'll have a very special guest riding and driving in that parade today. Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue will drive his very own International 656 Farmall tractor in the Great Iowa Tractor Ride. The secretary's father purchased the Farmall new in 1968. It's been restored. And the Secretary of Agriculture will be proud to drive that in the state of Iowa today. And as far as the reports today that we'll be looking at, cattle on feed report came out Friday afternoon, and apparently not much of a change in the numbers as to what the trade analysts were expecting. Probably won't have too much impact on the cattle trade today at the Mercantile Exchange. You have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You as well. A couple of more stories here before we leave you this morning. First, on the U.S.-China trade front, a Chinese official says Chinese and U.S. trade negotiators are in contact on ways of resolving disputes. They have an expected meeting between their heads of state at G20 summit in Japan later this week. This weekend's G20 in Osaka is the first opportunity for Presidents Donald Trump and Xi Jinping to have a one-on-one and try to thrash out some of the trade dispute issues face-to-face, since Trump said he was preparing to target $300 billion in Chinese imports that he hasn't already hit with tariffs, extending them to everything that China ships to the United States. A senior Facebook executive says the social media site is in favor of regulation to address some of the dark problems of the Internet. Nick Clegg, the former leader of the UK Liberal Democrat Party, who now heads global affairs for Facebook, says it is not for private companies to decide how to balance free speech versus public harm. Clegg told the BBC today that companies like Facebook are not shunning government's intervention, but advocating a sensible way forward in addressing issues such as cyberbullying or fake news. Lawmakers have been pushing tech companies to take down offensive content more quickly and to do more in general to halt Internet harm. But Clegg says it's up to Democratic politicians in the Democratic world to set those rules. Little developing business news this morning from Las Vegas. Eldorado Resorts will buy Caesars in a deal valued at more than $17 billion, creating a casino giant. Details of that still coming in this morning. We'll try to flush more of them out as we head forward this morning here on the Opening Bell. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk outlook for Monday, June the 24th. The Chicago Fed National Activity Index is due. The Dallas Fed Manufacturing Survey also due. As we look ahead to the rest of the week, the S&P Case-Shiller Home Price Index is tomorrow, along with U.S. new home sales. We'll see earnings from Micron and FedEx on Wednesday. U.S. crude oil inventories, General Mills earnings. Thursday, Nike and Walgreens earnings. We'll also get a third estimate of U.S. GDP on Thursday. And on Friday, U.S. personal income and spending data, Constellation brand earnings, and, of course, the G20 summit begins. Lots of things that could move the markets this week and today, this Monday, June the 24th.